At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
When it comes to showing appreciation, the gift you choose says everything. Minky Couture luxury blankets make the perfect statement. Soft, stylish, and unforgettable. Whether you're thanking a client, rewarding an employee, or celebrating a milestone, nothing delivers warmth and gratitude like a Minky blanket. With custom options and elegant packaging, your gift will stand out and be remembered long after the moment has passed. Make your corporate gifting extraordinary with Minky Couture. Luxury you can feel. Visit minkycouture.com to get started.
The Lifestyle Show, presented by Selena McKenzie.
Now, our first guest of the week is going to tell us about her book called Natural Connection, What Indigenous Wisdom and Marginalized People Teaches About Environmental Action. Welcome to the show, Jocelyn Longdon.
Hi there. Thank you so much for having me.
You're welcome. So I'm just going to come over to you. Tell us about the book.
Yeah, so Natural Connection is my first book. It's all about rekindling our sense of awe and wonder and connection with the planet, and looking at this through the histories and legacies of marginalized people who have and continue to shape the world for the better through environmental action. It's about really challenging some of the wider issues around environmentalism and bringing a kind of more hopeful look that's centered in community and centered in connection rather than disconnection and distance.
Yeah, because if you look at indigenous people, I mean, they've got years and years of knowledge. So we should be using this, shouldn't we?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think it's also about understanding that we all come from places with people who have that knowledge. It's not just people far away in Britain. We've got, huge histories of nature connected peoples, whether that's the Druids or whether that's the Celts, so much history to learn from. So it's about honoring these stories, and it's about kind of respecting and being inspired by Indigenous peoples all over the world, and really learning from the histories and the successes and the challenges to get a bit of a better idea of what environmental action looks like and to kind of move away from this kind of despair that we have about the environmental crises, because it is serious and it is scary, but we have a huge amount to learn from those who have come before us, and lots of people are kind of putting that work in today.
Yeah, I was reading about the Aboriginal people in Australia who have long practiced apparently traditional fire management.
Yes.
So, you know, I suppose because it gets really hot in Australia, I suppose they've had to learn it over the years. But we could learn it in wildfires here in Spain, in America, wherever, couldn't we?
Yeah, I mean, especially in Spain, obviously we've seen in the last few years terrible wildfires. And I think that this is kind of a key part of the book, is there's so much exchange that we could be having right now in terms of the environmental solutions and environmental actions that we're changing. And the world is changing at such a fast pace. Places that might have never experienced flooding before are now experiencing flooding. And there are communities, say, in the Pacific Islands who have been experiencing flooding, or people in the north of Britain who have been experiencing flooding for years and years and years. And so it's about how do we come together as not just our kind of local communities and national communities, but also as a global community to share ideas and inspiration and stories and learnings, rather than thinking that we're kind of fixing everything from scratch, because we do already have all of the tools. It's just about connecting the dots between them and connecting ourselves to each other.
But is there also room, Jocelyn, for the new things that come about? I mean, AI, for example, can they start using AI? We've never used this over the past years, but this is a new thing that could help.
Yeah, so outside of being an author, I am currently a PhD researcher at Cambridge. And this is the exact topic of my work, is looking at how AI is being used to monitor biodiversity around the world. So with a focus on forest conservation. And I work with a technology called bioacoustics, which is how you use AI and sound to record the forest, and then use the machine learning algorithms to identify species within those recordings. And so there is a huge scope for that, and in many different fields, whether that's oceanography or whether that's atmospheric science or energy, even tracking energy of buildings and reducing carbon emissions from buildings. There's a huge kind of scope of spaces that AI is being used in now. And my work specifically looks to kind of challenge and make sure that where we are using technology, it's not coming at the expense of marginalized communities. It's part of a broader system of bringing social cohesion and equity, rather than another tool that brings more distance and disconnection into the world.
Yeah, it can be abused. That's the sad thing,
exactly.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
And I know the book also celebrates some extraordinary acts from ordinary people who have paved the way for today's environmental change, such as the Chipko Women of India.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. The Chipko Women of India, they really kind of led the way for what we now kind of think about as the tree hugging movement. They were a group of women, part of a wider community in India and part of a wider lineage of action in India, actually, that of people who were trying to resist like large scale logging in India. And on the day that they began this protest, all of the men of the village had been sort of called away by the government as part of a ploy, so that the men would go and then the loggers would come in and log this whole swathe of the forest. And so the women decided, no, we're not going to stand for that, and begun hugging the trees. They bound themselves to each other and to the trees, and for 3 days staved off the loggers. And that eventually led to policy change in India that stopped logging in the area for over a decade. And so, yeah, incredible women who took it upon themselves. It was not a pre-organized thing, although it kind of it was sitting in a lineage of action that had already been happening. And I think it's a really great example of how we each have that capacity when we do connect to movements and the legacies of people around us. We are more likely to move to act, especially when it matters the most.
Yeah. I'm just looking at a picture of the front picture of the book, Natural Connection. You're not hugging a tree there, are you?
No, that's not me.
That's not you. Is somebody hugging a tree, or are they tied to a tree? I can't work it out.
So that's a Barker man from Congo. And,
this computer's miles away.
No, don't worry. This community climb and scale very, very tall trees in order to collect honey. And that's part of their natural connection to the environment, the ecosystems that they live in. But the Barker have been persecuted in the Congo. The kind of creation of large scale nature reserves have actually led to violence against this community and pushed them out of these spaces. So I think for the cover of the book, it was a very important image because it shows the kind of the two sides of what environmental action and connection to nature looks like. It's deep wisdom. It's, you know, decades and centuries of tradition, but also this kind of tension between disconnecting people from the environments that they live in, which is kind of why we're in this mess in the first place.
Yes, exactly. And who is Ogoni from Nigeria?
So the Ogoni Nine, they're from Ogoni Land. Ogoni Land's a region in Nigeria, in the Delta, in the Niger Delta. And that area, alongside lots of other villages, and including lots of villages, as a key place that's been polluted for decades by fossil fuel companies and has experienced decades and decades of oil spills that have harmed human health, that have harmed the local wildlife, that have harmed fishing and then harming livelihoods because people depend on fishing and natural resources around them for their livelihood. And the Ogoni Nine were nine individuals from Ogoni Land who in the end, ended up being executed for their protest against the large fossil fuel companies who had created big connections with the Nigerian military in order to kind of push back against the activism that was going on in the region to protect the Nigerian people. And so this kind of movement was led by Ken Sarawira, who was one of the Ogoni Nine who was murdered, and people from Ogoni Land and people from the Niger Delta continue to this day to advocate for and demand not just compensation but accountability from the fossil fuel companies who have polluted their environment and have polluted the places that they live.
Yeah, we've got so much to learn. And it also celebrates the power of community, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, pretty much all of the case studies in the book center on the way that people have come together to resist environmental destruction and also to create abundance and beauty. I think often people feel, especially in the global north and in the west, where maybe we aren't so exposed, those of us that aren't so exposed to environmental destruction, we don't really know what it feels like to have the urgency of action in terms of, you know, my land has just been polluted by oil. And sometimes hearing about all of these stories or hearing about environmental destruction makes us overwhelmed and makes us feel like we're alone or that there's no way that we could possibly solve this problem. And I think a lot of the case studies in the book show that people who have come from ordinary backgrounds, vulnerable backgrounds, marginalized backgrounds, have come together, always come together. No one person solves or resists environmental destruction, but it's built in community, and it's built in communities coming together as they usually would. Some of the examples are of the PCB protests, which happened in America. And that was a community who had already been coming together through their church and through food and through sharing food together. And they kind of built their activism that way. And so I think it's trying to show how we can tap into the communities that we're already a part of, and that the people who have, you know, kind of pushed and paved the way for environmental action, they haven't been any different from any of us, but they've come together and been motivated to make a change and to stand up for what they believe in.
Yeah, quite right. And you mentioned this as your first book. Do you give talks on this subject as well?
Yes, I do. Over the last kind of 4 years, I've been speaking a lot about environmental justice, speaking about connection to nature, speaking about biodiversity and technology and nature tech. But for the book specifically, I have a book tour this year, starting this week.
Wow.
And so I'll be traveling around the UK and hopefully bits of Europe as well to talk about the book and talk about the topics within the book, whether that's technology and the nature crisis, or whether that's activism against environmental destruction and imagination and how we can use our imagination to build better worlds. I'm very excited for a lot of the conversations that are going to happen over the last over the next few months, and just bringing these stories to people, because I think we really need them right now.
I agree.
Where the world is right now, we really need stories of hope and of inspiration.
I agree. And you're right, it can be overwhelming. Just for the normal person on the street, it can be very overwhelming because we feel like we've got no power to know what to do.
Yeah, and I think that's part of it, though, is that the people who profit from environmental destruction rely on us feeling powerless. And I think what the stories within the book show is that even in the most sort of marginalized and vulnerable spaces, people have found their power, because our power is not something that's given to us. We have it internally. And so I think it's tapping into what is our power. We all won't have the same power, but together we do. And I think that part of the news cycle, part of the way that we talk about and the stories we tell about environmental crises make us feel powerless. Yeah. And so I'm always trying to find ways to bring that power back to us, to rekindle our sense of love for this planet. Because, I mean, in the UK, 80% of people are concerned about the climate crisis. And, it's likely that most of those people feel angry, feel anxious, feel scared, and feel a certain amount of grief about what's going on. And so those emotions are actually part of what will give us our power. Using those emotions to move us to action rather than inaction is us taking our power back.
Great advice. Well, the book has been described as urgent, profound and compassionate. It's called Natural Connection, What Indigenous Wisdom and Marginalised People Teaches About Environmental Action. It's out this Thursday, I believe, Jocelyn, is that right?
Yeah, this Thursday. Yeah.
Congratulations. You can pre-order it now. Our listeners can pre-order it from our website, tre.radio. And if people want to find out more about you, Jocelyn, do you have your own website as well?
Yeah, they can find me at joycelynlongdon.com.
I'm sorry, I've been pronouncing your name completely wrong. Joycelyn, sorry.
J-O-Y-C-E-L-Y-N. Okay.
Well, it's been great to chat to you. Thanks for being on the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
My pleasure. Bye-bye for now.
Bye.
When it comes to showing appreciation, the gift you choose says everything. Minky Couture luxury blankets make the perfect statement. Soft, stylish, and unforgettable. Whether you're thanking a client, rewarding an employee, or celebrating a milestone, nothing delivers warmth and gratitude like a Minky blanket. With custom options and elegant packaging, your gift will stand out and be remembered long after the moment has passed. Make your corporate gifting extraordinary with Minky Couture, luxury you can feel. Visit minkycouture.com to get started.